with some good friends. You know, you can plug in a destination on your phone or your GPS, and what it usually does is it gives you multiple routes to where you want to go. If you want to go the slow way or the scenic way or the really fast way, it gives you multiple routes. And it really just doesn't matter which way you take. It just matters where you go to. Values aren't like that. Values don't say, you know, it really doesn't matter how you get there, just as long as you get there. The values in a family, the values in a church, they say, no. The values say, this is how you're going to get there. They're sort of a way of measuring whether or not we're getting there, whether or not we're actually on the right trail. So they help us figure out this is how we're going to get there. And they even, when we're not feeling like we're getting there in the right way, they help kind of write a prescription. This is what you need to get back to the way that we're trying to get to pursuing new life. And so we've got our values on banners each week. I'm going to put one up. And this week from Matthew 9, we're going to be looking at this value of belonging before belief. Belonging before belief. What that means is we want you to feel like, and really be at home here. If you're a guest with us this morning, I pray you feel like you belong, whether or not you believe in Jesus. We want this to be a place where you feel like you're at home. And we don't, you know, scan your member badge at the front door, and if it's green, we let you in, and if it's red, we don't, right? But we don't want to do that. Some churches do that. I mean, the gate is locked, and you have to get, you know, have a retina scan, thumbprint identification. I mean, it's got to be the whole bit. We got to know if you believe everything right down the line before we let you in the front door. And what I pray we see is that in Matthew 9, we see that that's just not the way Jesus works. And so I pray that we see an angle into this idea of belonging before belief. That's really, in a lot of ways, what Matthew himself is going to see when he looks at Jesus. And so let me just ask the question. What does it mean to belong? You know, when you feel like you really belong somewhere, when you've really kind of been given that, I belong here. You really feel like you can elbow your way around. I feel like I feel at home here. I feel comfortable. What does that mean to you? Different stages of our life. I mean, growing up, middle school, high school. When do you really feel like, you know, you've been let into that one group that you've just wanted? When does that happen? Does it happen when there's this one girl or this one boy or there's this one group that finally kind of give you the nod and say, yeah, you can come in and talk to this? Does it look like when you start wearing the right clothes or saying the right things, or when do you really feel like you belong? In a church, in a family, at work, when do you feel like you belong? What I want to propose is that you feel like you actually belong when you really have been accepted. You've been accepted in. And what we really need to wrestle with in Matthew 9 is, when does that happen? Particularly with Jesus. We're talking about God. This is maybe the one time we gather together and we remember ultimate things. God and Jesus and the Spirit and the Bible and just ultimate things, right? So that's obviously where we want to go. What does it look like when you really belong with God? You've really been accepted by God. When does that happen? And Matthew 9 has an incredibly startling sort of a story about when that happens. And it's a story, quite frankly, that upsets people that are very, very religious. People that might even be just like you and me. And so what I want to do is just read the story. Notice it's four verses. It's not long, but it's packed with this belonging talk that I pray will govern our time together this morning. Notice what it says, Matthew 9, verse 9. Jesus passed on from there. He saw a man called Matthew. Matthew puts his own call into his story of Jesus. I think that's really ironic. Four verses, it's not long. He knows this isn't about him. But in some ways, he said, this story about Jesus would be remiss if I didn't include my little story, because it includes us, doesn't it? Even though it's not fully about us. It says, Jesus passed on from there, and he saw a man called Matthew. It's in his own gospel story of Jesus. Sitting at the tax booth. And he said to him, follow me. Follow me. And he rose. He rose from the tax booth and he followed him. And Jesus reclined at table in the house. It's kind of a blocky way of saying he got really comfortable in the house after he called Matthew, and he ate. He behold, many tax collectors and sinners came and were reclining with Jesus and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw this, they said to his disciples, "Why does your teacher, your rabbi, eat with tax collectors and sinners?" But when he heard it, he said, "Those who are well, they don't need a doctor, they don't need a physician, but those who are sick, go and learn what this means. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners." This is an incredibly powerful story about when does belonging really, really happen? And so when we feel like we belong, well, this story really helps us see that, oh, let me back up. Income tax. Anybody's heart jump there? Okay. We'll get there. Who's Matthew? What is he? Who is Jesus? What is he? Who is this group of the Pharisees? What's a Pharisee? I mean, many of you have been in church. You might know what that means. We need to explore who are these people and why is all of this sort of coming together around this area of belonging? What's this conflict all about? It says that Matthew's a tax collector. And what that really means, it could mean a lot of different things, but in the ancient world, it was basically a customs official. He was staked out at a place where trade would be coming in, either fish from the sea, trade coming across from one area of governance, whether it was Herod of Philip or Herod or somebody else in their territory. So they're stationed. It's like going when you go into California, you got to check and make sure you don't have this or you do have that. You got to go through customs, so to speak. But you don't have to pay any money. You just can't have fresh fruit of certain kinds, right? Now imagine if we went from one state to the next, and every time you went from one state to the next, money just came out of your debit account. $100 right there. That's a customs official. They're the face to the government that's taking money from you when you bring goods in or take goods out. Matthew is that. He's a tax collector. He's a customs official. And Matthew occupies a very interesting place in the story because he's really got his foot in two different worlds, and he doesn't belong in either of them. He's a Jew. He's native to his homeland as a Jew. And yet, he's living in a homeland where an oppressive government, Rome, has come in, and they've basically put their thumb down on Israel and said, "You'll do what we want, and we're going to show you by how we tax you." Scholars estimate that the Israelites, when they paid their tithe, their 10% to the temple, and when they paid their taxes with from their trade, they were paying upwards of 40 to 50%. There's just this oppressiveness. Can you imagine 50% coming right off the top? You just go, doesn't that make you a little tense in the neck? And so without further ado, how do you respond when you see a word like that? Income tax, you go, "Oh, how dare they?" Right? Capital gains tax. Who are they to take my money when the stock climbs and I make a killing? Who are they? That's my money. Capital gains tax, right? How about financial audit? I don't know of any other term that makes me feel like, oh my goodness, audit. When somebody says, "We're being audited," you go, "Oh yeah, we're going to pray for you, right? Can we just pray right now for you?" Right? Audit, the audit. And lastly, the IRS. You go, "Oh." Now the thing for us is those are all like terms that make us just, but they're vague. It's just some distant place, somewhere that takes our money. And Matthew's not that. Matthew is the face behind this kind of a thing. Taxes weren't taken in general, they were taken by a real person. You would go and you would catch a bunch of fish and you'd come in and 20% goes to Rome. And so Matthew is the face behind that feeling. Can you imagine? Instead of paying taxes to the government, you go, "I hate the government." But it's a person that comes to your door, and you don't say, "I hate the government." You say, "I hate that person." That's Matthew. He is the face behind all of that. And Matthew's in an interesting place because he's really trying to put a foot in both worlds, and he doesn't really belong in either of them. He's a Jew, but see, being a tax collector made you an outsider. You're unclean. You're collecting taxes for the very group that's oppressing us as a people. And so there was this huge stigma In fact, they weren't even allowed to come to the temple. They were unclean. They couldn't do all the religious work of presenting sacrifices. They couldn't, people wouldn't be around them. They wouldn't even want to be associated with them because they were unclean. So Matthew's a Jew, but people really don't want to be around him. He really can't partake in all the things that make an Israelite. They can't eat with all the right people. They can't, they're really not right in God's eyes. They were actually on par with a prostitute. They were on the same level in an Israelite's eyes. So he's a Jew, but he really can't be a Jew. But he's collecting taxes for the Roman, but he's not a Roman. He really doesn't belong anywhere. And into that place of not really fitting in one place or another, Jesus opens himself up and says, I'll give you a place to belong if you really want to belong. You want to belong somewhere? You want to be accepted by someone? And he just does something radical. He says to Jesus, follow me. And it's not a barking out of a command. It's an invitation. He doesn't say, follow me or else. He says, follow me. You want to belong somewhere? I know you don't fit here. You don't fit here. Follow me. Follow me. And that just tells us something about Jesus. It tells us he is not ashamed to call anybody or everybody into his fold. This is somebody that you'd say, a rabbi, somebody of high esteem, somebody in the religious elite. If there's anybody they would call welcome into their elite inner circle, it would not be these kinds of people. And yet Jesus is unashamed to call any of us, all of us, people like you and me, who we just don't fit in this circle or that circle. And Jesus says, I've got a circle. Follow me. Follow me. And so for Jesus, there really is a threshold that needs to be crossed to belong to him. There really is. As we talk about what it means to belong, I think there's three different angles on this idea of belonging. For Jesus, you belong to Jesus after you believe. You do. Jesus calls Matthew to himself. He says, follow me. And Matthew doesn't follow him because he doesn't believe. He believes in Jesus. He doesn't know what that means quite yet. He doesn't unpack that, but he's so compelling. He goes, you know what? Luke says, in Luke's version of this story, he gives a little more detail. It says, Matthew stood up and left everything and followed him. Because he believed in him. He believed in him. He didn't have all of that pinned down, but he believed that this is a place I could belong. Let me ask the question. When you gave your life to Jesus and you were baptized into him, how many of you were like, you know, I know perfectly well what I'm doing here. I have all the understanding. It's like, did you know fully what you were doing? No, you didn't. But you knew enough to follow, didn't you? You knew enough that when you looked at the cross of Christ and you heard the message of salvation, you thought, I don't have this all unpacked, but I know what I'm told by Jesus is if I believe in him, if I follow him, I belong to him. When you believe in Jesus and when your belief leads to you following him, you're in the circle. You belong to him. You're his. You're his. Jesus isn't afraid to call anyone. The people that you'd go, there's just no way that person, Jesus would want them. And Jesus says, hey, follow me. And so that in itself should be very counterintuitive to us understanding the fact that Jesus is not ashamed, and when he calls somebody to follow him, and when they pick everything up and they leave everything, or they leave their life behind to follow Jesus, they're in the circle. We belong with Jesus after we believe. But Matthew does something different, because if you're like me, you're going, but how come that's our value then? I thought you said you believe, you belong after you believe, and you're saying our church value is you belong before you believe. Isn't that? It's because of Matthew. Matthew does something radical. And Luke, again, Luke's version has a couple of details that kind of help support this version in Matthew, Luke's version does. It says in verse 10, Jesus reclined at the table in the house after he'd called Matthew. Whose house is this? Luke tells us. This is Matthew's house. After being called by Jesus, you know what Matthew does? He has this huge party for Jesus. He invites all the people he knows, not the elites, not the religious, the people he knows, the people he's in the break room with, the people he plays cards with, the people that he stays up late watching TV with. He has this huge party, and it says, behold, many of them, there's not like three of them. Matthew's a popular guy. people either love him or hate him, but everybody knows him. He's one of those guys. So he has this huge party with a bunch of, Matthew says, behold, many of them, many tax collectors, many of the outsiders, many of those who are hated by the religious elite come to this party. And they're reclining with Jesus. That doesn't mean they're just hanging out, like sitting by the pool, reclining, catching some sun. That's a cue for they're eating together. And they're not just eating in their meal. Jews at this time, they're accustomed to sitting at a table with chairs, but not for something like this. This is a feast. This is a banquet. Matthew spares no expense. He's got a lot of money. So much money that Rome actually would set their taxes higher to account for the fact that they knew tax collectors were thieves. So they would set the taxes higher because they know the tax collector is going to be peeling that off the top to pad their pocketbooks. So Matthew's got money, and he spares no expense to have a banquet for Jesus. So he invites Jesus and the disciples and all of his friends. And he does all of that on one assumption. Jesus isn't going to be above this. Jesus isn't going to be above eating with people that are unclean, unholy, sinners, tax collectors, whoever they are. Matthew doesn't throw this party and he's going, oh man, I hope Jesus comes. And oh man, when he gets there, I hope he actually comes in and he sits down at the table with my friends. No. He spares no expense and throws this huge party on the assumption that people in some way and in some form are going to be befriended by Jesus before they believe in him. He's going to welcome them with open arms. He's going to befriend them and be close to them and talk to them and laugh with them and put his arm around them and enjoy them because they're people and he loves them. And Matthew bases this whole party around, I know that you belong after you believe. I left everything. But he throws a party based on the assumption that for Matthew, he goes, I know that you belong after you believe, and yet I also know if he would call me a tax collector, me an outsider, me who is unclean, he surely wouldn't want to, he wouldn't bat his eye at hanging out with people like me, would he? It wasn't like Matthew instantly became holy when he followed him. He was still a train wreck, but he decided to leave everything, right? So he invites everybody to be with Jesus and to recline and to eat with Jesus based on the assumption that in some way, shape, or form, Jesus is going to welcome them into a circle. He's going to befriend them. And he's going to let them belong before they believe. He's going to really say, look, I'm here with you. I'm eating with you. Eating in the ancient world was the most concrete way of saying, I accept you. I'm willing to befriend you. I'm not above you. There were so many different dietary laws for ancient Israel about who you could eat with, who you shouldn't eat with, who would make you unclean, who wouldn't make you unclean, what really enables you to belong in terms of belonging with God and being faithful to God. And Jesus blurs this line and says, there's obviously a certain sense in which you're not fully a part of the family in a sense until you really fully believe in Jesus, and yet that line gets blurry with Jesus and with Matthew because he just has this huge party. And he says, look, Jesus is the one person where you can belong in some sense before you believe. Before you believe. I was having a breakfast with a couple of retired firefighters this week, and it was interesting. One of them was sharing with me that they're having a church service and they're inviting the community. And he was telling me that he's going to speak at this with a couple other people in the church. And I asked him, I said, well, what are you going to speak about? I'm preaching Sunday, so give me some good stuff here, right? So he told me what he's going to speak about. He said, you know, I was just asked to just tell my story. I said, oh, that's great. Tell me your story. So he told me a story, and he said the one thing, he said he was meeting with a small group of Christians in Junction City, this is 25, 30 years ago, meeting with him in the Grange Hall, and he said, I was dating this girl. I'm like, oh, there's always a girl involved. What is with that? I'm dating this gal, thinking about getting married, but she just said, look, I go to church. I love Jesus. If you want to marry me, like, this is who I am. You know, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday, the whole bit, right? She's in. And he goes, well, okay, for her, I'll do it, you know? Like, sucker. Sucker. Right? So he goes to this church meeting. It's just, you know, it's 30 people. It's just a small little group gathering of people. But he said the thing that blew him away when he walked in the door was he said, these are real people. These are not holier-than-thou people. It doesn't mean they're not claiming some real ground that's been taken in their life, some real transformation that's happened. But he said, the thing that changed me the most, the thing I want to share with my church family is the thing that really made me want what they had was that they were real with me. They just let me belong. And I'm thinking, oh man, they let me belong to them before I even believed what they believed. And you know what he said? He said, that made me want to believe what they believed. That made me want to. Now, some people don't. They go, yeah, that was nice. Those cookies were good and all that. I'm really not going to bite down on what they do. Or I think that's weird. But for a lot of people who go, you know, I'll come, but it's really for her. It's not for me. It's certainly not for God. When they come and when somebody feels like they belong before they believe, you know what that does? It perhaps provides an opportunity where they go, I might actually want what they have. He said, that changed my life. That really sent me on a search for who, what are they doing? What do they believe? What is this about? And Matthew throws this huge party on the assumption that if he invites Jesus and his disciples and all of his buddies, they're not going to be all standing at one room and the rest of them at the other. He says, I just know that Jesus is going to want to befriend these kinds of people. He's going to want to be around them. He's going to, in some sense, let them belong before they believe so that maybe in time they'll want to belong because they believe. Now, we've read the end of the story. What does this do to the religious people? Who are the Pharisees? The Pharisees see this and get their tail in a kink, and they say, they don't even say it to Jesus. They say to his disciples, why does your rabbi, you know, why does your rabbi eat with these people? Because in their mind, rabbis don't eat with these people. If there's anybody they call into their inner circle, it's the elite. It's the ones who want to be faithful. It's the ones who don't have any problems. It's the ones that have it all figured out. Why does your rabbi do this? Why does he befriend people, let people belong before they really believe? We don't really trust him. We don't trust these kinds of people. They're really not showing that they really want to be holy or want to be faithful or want to whatever, to believe. Why does he do this? And Jesus overhears them and he really shames them. He really challenges these Pharisees, these religious people. The Pharisees are this kind of this group of people that emerged a couple hundred years before Jesus. It sort of kind of emerged, kind of a grassroots movement of Israelites, of Jews, that really just looked at all of their problems as a nation, and they said, you know, all these problems would go away if we just tightened up the belt a few notches. If we just said, if we could just obey, all of our problems would go away. And so they set out as a kind of this group of people that had immense political power, grassroots kind of a people that made themselves into professional teachers, defenders of the law of the Old Testament, just saying, look, if we could obey, if we could finally as a people obey, Rome would go away. They wouldn't oppress us anymore. All of our problems would go away. So what we really need to do is we need to tighten up the belt. We need to start cracking the whip a little bit here. We need to say, let's get our act together, Israel. Let's get cleaned up and let's obey and God will bless us. And so that's why when Jesus, rather than saying, all right, guys, let's crack the whip and really behave, Jesus says, come and eat with me. And he says, why does he do that? It's really based on an assumption that the Pharisees have about belonging. For a Pharisee, for a really religious person, you really only belong after you behave. After you behave. And there's a lot we could say about that. Because if you're like me, the needle in your spiritual life is always, because we're using a compass, the needle is always moving from belonging after you believe or belonging before you believe to you'll really only belong after you behave, after you get your act together, after you tighten things up a little bit. You'll only take communion if you've had a good week. I've seen it. And you will take communion if you've had a good week. You're the first one to celebrate your victories and the first one to whip yourself with your failures. Because you didn't behave, and therefore you don't belong anymore. And Jesus cuts right through that and says, that's just not the way people change. What makes people change is not going, what I need to do is behave, and then I'll belong. And Jesus says, you'll be at it for the rest of your life. and you'll never get in. You'll never get in. And Jesus comes into that and says, no, you'll actually belong when you believe in me. You might even belong before you believe in me so that you'll believe in me. That's when the change comes. The real irony to Christian behavior, you know, the good Christian behavior, isn't by just tightening up the belt. It's by going, Jesus loves me precisely when I wasn't behaving. That's when I belonged, when I said, I need you, Lord. I need you and what you've done to belong. The real irony is when that gets into the heart, behavior starts changing. Behavior starts coming online. And we're certainly a work in progress. We're not perfect, but we never belong after we behave. If you think you're going to belong after you behave, you're never going to get in. Because you know what? You're never going to behave perfectly, right, are you? If you're waiting for that one day, that one week, that one month where you behave so you can finally belong, you're never going. You're never gonna belong. Jesus quotes an Old Testament prophet, not Isaiah. He quotes an Old Testament prophet named Hosea. He quotes Hosea 6:6 after he's asked this question. Why does your teacher eat with these sinners, these people that are oppressing us, these sick, wicked people? And he says, look, people that are sick, they need a doctor. Not people that are well, or people that, there's an irony here, people who think that they're well. The sick people really do need a doctor, but the well people, they don't need one, or they don't think they need one. He's speaking directly to them. He says, go learn what this means, as if they hadn't thought about it, as if they hadn't memorized. They know Hosea 6:6. They know the Old Testament by heart. Have you read it? Do you really understand what it's trying to do, what it's trying to point out in you, religious people? He says, I desire mercy, Hosea 6:6 says. I desire mercy and not sacrifice. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners. What does that mean? I came to call the sinners and not the righteous. What does it mean that God desires mercy but not sacrifice? Well, sacrifice was the most concrete way for an Old Testament Israelite to obey God and to come to the temple to present an animal, or to present a portion of their grain, or a portion of their wine, or whatever crop they were in, an agrarian culture, whatever crop they had, whatever animals they kept, they were commanded to come and bring some of that and sacrifice it at the temple, on the altar, to purify them, to take their sins away. That's what sacrifice was. And so what Jesus is saying here is he's saying, look, you've become a people, you come every week, you come every month, you come to all the feasts with your sacrifice, and in the midst of doing that, you haven't realized that your religion is not meant to conceal your brokenness. It's not meant to go, I'm going to bring my sacrifice, I'm going to do all of that, and once I've done that, I'm righteous. And Jesus says, wait. In the midst of your religion, you failed to realize the real desire, the real design of your religion. That in the midst of doing religious things, you can go, okay, I've done what God has asked, and now I'm fine. And God, through Hosea 6:6, says, you can do all the religious stuff and just not have a heart change, really not want what God wants, really not see what this is all about. And he's saying to the Pharisees, that's you. You do all the religious stuff, but you fail to realize that in the midst of doing all the things God has commanded, presenting all the sacrifices, paying all the tithes, that you're using that to cover over the fact that you're broken. Why are you presenting sacrifices? It's not so you can say, we obeyed God, look at us, we're great. No, the reason you're presenting a sacrifice is because you're a sinner. You're broken. Somebody needs to pay. And if you don't want it to be you, it needs to be this animal. But I made the sacrifice, I'm righteous. Well, you're righteous, but you're broken. You can be righteous and broken at the same time. Right? And so Jesus is saying, what I really want from you isn't to just stop all the sacrifices. What I want you to do is, in the midst of doing all the religious work, can you realize, can you remember that religion isn't meant to cover over your brokenness? It's not meant to conceal your brokenness. It's meant to reveal it. That's what real religion's for. Real religion is meant to reveal your brokenness, not conceal it. You know that you really don't do anybody a favor on Sunday morning when you're coming to do your religion? And you go, I'm doing this, but I hope they don't find out who I really am. Or you come and every week you're like this, but inside you're just like, This is not the place. You're not doing God a favor. You're not doing yourself a favor. You're not doing me a favor. You're not doing anybody a favor if you work your religion, if we think this is about concealing our brokenness, we've missed the point. And Jesus says, you Pharisees, you religious elite, you forgot to realize the reason this is all here, the reason God gave all of this to us was not to hide us from ourselves or him. It was to throw us down on our knees and say, we need mercy, God. And because you've been merciful, we're going to be merciful to others. Real religion is not meant to conceal brokenness. It's meant to reveal it. And Jesus says, you know what the hardest thing, one of the things that can get in the way the most of really belonging, really trusting that God can bring us into the inner circle, sometimes it's all the stuff that we do as a religious people. One of the things that I wrote down here, just as we get ready for communion, if there isn't any more of a concrete reminder or remember of our need for grace, our need for God's mercy, it's communion. I mean, isn't that what this is about? Isn't it? We don't come to the communion table and go, I'm so thankful, I really don't need this, but I'm going to do it anyway. No, we come to communion not to conceal our brokenness, but to reveal it, to remember, oh my goodness, I have nothing good apart from you, Jesus. There's nothing good in me apart from what's at this table. And so we'll be coming to the table shortly together. I wrote down a couple things here. For us as a church family, what would it look like if we just continually believed this? Have you experienced this? Like, have you been in a church, maybe before you were a believer, and you go, I don't believe a thing. But you found yourself belonging, and you went, whoa, that's interesting. And you're just kind of like the slippery slope. It might not have been immediate, but you found yourself wanting to go back. It's kind of an irresistible environment. Maybe you're experiencing that right now. Maybe we just did a bad job of that. And if you're a guest with us, we apologize. We want you to belong. We want this to be a place where you can belong before you believe, because for Matthew, that was a turning point in his life. And he brought all of his friends to belong to Jesus before they believed in him. So just a couple things. What would it look like if we continue to try to be a place where we would belong before we believe? And I just put, we'd remember what Sunday morning is. What is this? This is a time where we work our religion, right? We work our religion. It's a family gathering, but it's a family gathering expecting guests. Can you imagine a family gathering where you weren't expecting somebody knocking at the door? You've got all your closest of kin, you got the dinner table set, and somebody knocks at the door and says, hey, can I come on in and eat with you? That's not a guest. You're expecting guests. That's a visitor. And when a visitor comes by that you're not expecting, you don't go, okay, I wouldn't go, yeah, come on in, we got an extra spot for you, I'm expecting you. I'd be like, yeah, so can I set an appointment with you? I'm not expecting you. That's a visitor. That's somebody you're not expecting. That's not what this is. What this is this is a family gathering. People who belong because they believe. And yet it's not just that, is it? This is a place where a gathering of family comes. But you know what we're expecting? What are we expecting? Guests. We're expecting people, and we're looking for people who maybe don't believe yet, and we want to do everything we can to help them belong. Not after they believe. Have you been in a church? I know you have. I know you have. Where you've been in a church where nobody said hi to you. They didn't even look at you, hardly. You didn't belong because you weren't a part of the family. You were a visitor knocking outside saying, can I come in? And they said no in a lot of different ways. And we don't want to be that kind of church, because that's just not who Jesus is in this story. That's not what Matthew assumes about Jesus in this story. So we remember this is a family gathering, and we're expecting guests, and we want them to feel at home, because even though they're not a part of the family yet, we want them to be around us in such a way that we want them to see in us that this isn't about concealing our brokenness. We're not all walking around going like this, and life's great, everything's great, no problems, I'm with Jesus. We walk around and we go, and we can celebrate the victories. We can go, man, life is good. And I'm still limping a little. I don't have this all pinned down. We're just a people that are real, right? You can belong here because this isn't about concealing brokenness. This is about revealing it. Would you want to be a part of our team of people that greets people at the door and hosts them and shows them where to go? You know, it's the difference between Jerry's and Home Depot. If we have any Home Depot people in the house, I'm sorry. Any Home Depot people in the house? Oh my goodness. Our chairman, Lord help me. You go to Home Depot and they say, yeah, the nails are over there. And you go to Jerry's and they say, let me take you and show you where the nails are. Can I help you with anything? Right? B5. And let me show you where that is. Do you want to be a part of one of our teams that we're kind of starting to build slowly, where when somebody comes in and they're a guest, we're expecting them. And they say, do you have a nursery? And we don't say, yeah, it's over there. We say, we do have a guest. We have a nursery that they have little ones, and we want them to be a part of our family. Let me show you where our nursery is, and let me show you Miss Judy, or one of the gals that she's trained up to be on our nursery team. Isn't that a huge difference in your mind? Wouldn't that make a guest feel at home, belong before they believe, right? Do you want to be a part of our team that makes cookies, or a part of our team that prays, or part of what can we do to help people belong before they believe? All of that is undergirded by remembering what our religion's for. Remembering really what this communion service is all about. We come to the tables because we believe in Jesus, and yet we also come knowing that we were allowed to be befriended by Jesus long before we really accepted him. And so what I'd love to do is just pray and have us come to the tables when we're ready, because we want to celebrate this meal from the one person who called us out of maybe a couple of different situations where we just didn't belong. But he said, come follow me. And we believed in him. So let's pray. Jesus, if we're honest, we marvel. We marvel at the fact that you would call Matthew, call us, and you'd let us belong to you. There's something about you that is compelling. We want to follow you, and so we do. And yet there's also a compelling component to maybe we were one of those people at the party and we didn't make the decision then, but there's something, why would you let us eat with you before even deciding to follow you? It pulls us in a little closer. And so I just pray you'd help us remember, Jesus, that as we come to the table, that we belong because we believe, but you allowed us to, in some sense, belong before. And I pray that as we come, we'd remember this isn't meant to conceal our brokenness, God. The one reason we can stand with people that are on the outside of the family is because we share that one thing. We're all broken, and we need you. So we thank you for your grace, Jesus. It's in your name. Amen. Please come to the tables when you're ready and take the emblems back or take them there. And if somebody needs help getting them, we can get them to you when you're ready. So come when you're ready.